Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood will present comedian Susie Essman with their inaugural Giraffe Award for sticking out her neck to defend abortion and reproductive rights. Susie is a 31-year stand-up comedy veteran, has played Susie Green for all 8 seasons of the hit HBO comedy series Curb Your Enthusiasm. About 200 guests will attend Thursday night's 80 Years of Choice celebration and hear Essman share why she supports Planned Parenthood. Our good friend Susie Essman joins us this morning. Hello, Susie.
Hello, Joe.
It is wonderful to have you back.
Thank you.
Also, we welcome Shelley Hegan, who is Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood's president and CEO. And Shelley, thank you very much for being with us this morning as well.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of how the Giraffe Award came to be.
One of the things we often ask our supporters is to say out loud that they support reproductive rights and access to abortion. It's one of the hardest things to be open about right now because you never really know what reaction you're going to get when you talk to somebody. And we thought, you know, this is what we need to celebrate going forward, are people who are willing to say, I'm here, I believe in access, and I'm not shy about it. So that's why we're honoring Susie this year.
And, you know, Joe, I have to say, I live here in this community.
Yeah.
So this is kind of my safe haven where I hardly ever perform. But this is something that's so near and dear to my heart, Planned Parenthood, that I am performing in the Capital District.
What is it about, do you feel any of the pressure that Shelley was talking about of speaking out openly on these issues?
I don't, but it's interesting because when I was inviting guests, I had to kind of think, well, I'm not absolutely sure all these people I'm inviting are pro-choice. So I had to double check, you know, some of them are Catholic, but they all were.
Right.
But I don't personally feel it because I feel so strongly about Planned Parenthood as an organization and what they provide. And it's so much more than abortion rights. I mean, some across the country, Planned Parenthood's their funding is being cut. I don't know about New York. Is it New York?
New York, we're still doing okay.
I mean, I know in Texas and so many places across the country. And these are organizations that are providing health care for women. Not only contraceptive health care, but mammogram screenings and all kinds of health care for women. It's the only place that so many women have to go for their health care. And it just breaks my heart that the funding is being cut because there's so much controversy and polarization,
right,
over abortion rights.
It is interesting. You bring an interesting point about here in New York, because we tend, don't we, and this is for both of you, but we tend to have, I think, somewhat of a false insecurity of living in the Northeast. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what it's like outside of our borders.
Well, I have the good fortune to get together with Planned Parenthood CEOs from across the country pretty regularly, and then I always come home humbled at the fights I don't have to fight. That being said, we did see the women's equality agenda go down because of the 10th point, which was access to abortion and
right,
the codification of Roe v. Wade. So while we are very safe, I truly don't wake up in the morning wondering, am I going to be able to provide abortion services to women in the Capital District? It's going to take one change in the Supreme Court to make that be different.
It's so important also to me, Shelley, is the access to contraception. You know,
absolutely.
Let's not have as many abortions. Let's have contraception.
Right.
And I know that Obamacare now covers that, but I think people are uneducated about it. And I think Planned Parenthood is an organization that educates people. It's why it was started to begin with.
Right.
Was about educating women about contraception. And it's contraception, I think, has been probably the single most important change in the past 100 years in women's lives.
Agreed.
And here's the thing that where my little Joe brain breaks down that I can't figure out. If we do away with groups like Planned Parenthood, then what? Like, then who takes over that to help women and men and couples with these decisions?
That is the biggest question. I mean, there's private practices, of course, but there's no one out there doing really great, non-judgmental health care for reproductive rights or for reproductive care for men and women like Planned Parenthood does. And I mean, I'm humbled when I talk with our staff about the way that they are able to talk with anyone about anything with absolutely no surprise, shock, indignation. If you have a question and it's the most embarrassing question in the world, it's just an everyday occurrence at Planned Parenthood. So the access to that kind of care just doesn't exist outside of our walls.
It's just so interesting when you think about the whole idea of, first of all, abstinence is ridiculous. I have four kids in their 20s. I'm no dummy. My head isn't in the sand, you know. But the idea of all these questions being embarrassing and the idea of abstinence, our sexual urges are what keeps the species in existence. It's like taking the most base instinct that we have, which every animal has, you know, it's salmon swimming upstream to procreate, and to say there's something bad about that impulse, right. And there's something wrong with that impulse. And I think that's the way that people have always controlled the population, especially women. It's a way that women have always been controlled, to be told that impulse is a bad, dirty, naughty thing, as opposed to just the most natural thing. I'm seriously, the species would not exist if we didn't have that. We'd all be non-existent. Species that aren't interested in sex become extinct. Right. So, you know, to the idea that we stigmatize that urge in young girls, especially, who it's just they have no idea what it is. I mean, I remember being 16 and I got pregnant the first time I ever had sex when I was 16, which apparently is quite common. It's something more hormonally happens. Yeah. You're ready. But you are physically ready. You know, I mean,
right.
The way of the world has been, you know, 13-year-old girls were pregnant for thousands and thousands of years.
And is that when had you had the discussion with your family prior to that, or was that
no
the
discussion?
First yeah.
No discussion. You know what I did? I went to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Where I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York, my older sister took me to Planned Parenthood. And I wasn't using birth control. It was the first time I'd ever had sex. I didn't, you know. And I had an abortion. It had just become legal. It was 1971. Was it 1970? Became legal in
New York
State?
In New York State, yeah.
And it was traumatizing. It was not something that I did easily or readily. But, you know, I was 16. I didn't even really think about the choices.
Mm. Because there really aren't, I mean, you don't have a lot of options, do you?
You know, it's interesting because I have a niece who got pregnant at 19, which is not that young.
No.
And she had the baby, and I can't imagine this little boy not existing. And she went on to go to school and become a professional. But she had an amazing support system. Amazing family and extended family support system who helped her care for that child and go on to make her life happen. What if you're 16, 17, 18, 19, and you don't have that? And you have a baby and you're not educated and your life is just pretty much, that's it. You don't have those options. It's life altering. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are on that, Shelley.
I don't know those statistics off the top of my head, but I do know that women make these decisions for their families. You know, we have to be there as women who are mothers or someday will be mothers. We have to always think about the family we already have.
Yeah.
And so many women are really trying to safeguard that and protect that.
When it comes to you on stage, Susie, how much do you get into, or do you want to get into the politics of things like this?
There's a couple of answers to that. Not that much, because I tend to get angry.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of washes away my
comedy. Well, then there's a fine line between being funny and preaching, right?
And you know, there I have so many dear friends who are great political comedians, Lewis Black and Liz Winstead and so many of them, yeah. John Stewart, and they're so much better at it than I am, so I leave it to them. Also, the thing about politics is you have to be so you write a bit, and then next week it's irrelevant. I like perennials.
But something like in talking about equality, women, and women's issues. I mean, I would think obviously that is something that you could talk about and have a take on that obviously is going to stand test of time.
Lately,
unfortunately.
I mean, my rant lately, and this has been going on for years, is I'm so tired with the whole, especially with contraception and abortion, I am so tired, and no personal offense, Joe, of white men telling me what to do with my body and my mind. I'm just sick to death of them. And my husband's a white man, and I love him, and you're a white man, and I adore you. But it just seems like for my entire life, somebody was saying to me recently that they were getting these complaints from these older comedians about how horrible the world is now and how better things used to be. Yeah, if you were a white guy, things used to be great. Not for anyone else, not for women, not for people of color. If you were a white guy, the old days were fantastic. You controlled everything. And now here come all these other groups that are trying to take your power away from you, and you're running scared. But I don't feel sorry for you guys at all.
And I don't think most, this is difficult, but I don't think most of us feel sorry for us.
I see it all over these white guys that were so entitled and feel their power slipping away. You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is, I don't know the numbers, but, you know, in 50 years, everybody's going to be brown or something, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The world is changing very rapidly, and I think that women are tired of it. We're just tired of it. We're tired of not making as much money as men. We're tired that there's more women graduating from college, there's more women graduating from graduate school. We're just sick of it.
And how do you feel you can make a difference in that, or not even make a difference, just for, and I don't mean for the world, making the world a better place. I mean for you, of saying, okay, this is how I can operate and this is how I can work to make this a better place for me.
Well, I have three daughters that I hope to empower them in by example. Mm-hmm. And I do think that comedy is an incredibly powerful tool, because I think when people are laughing, there's an opening. They're right. Open in a certain way, and you could be a little subversive and get an idea in there that they might listen to when they're laughing that they wouldn't necessarily hear otherwise.
Do you get, what do you think, when you look as a female comedian, you have a reputation of whatever word you want to put in, body.
Yes, body. Like that one,
okay, whatever word you want to put in. But bitchy doesn't come up as much.
No, I'm not bitchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not angry.
I mean, my character that I play is angry, but yeah.
Susie, sure. But for in general, I think that's what's really interesting about you, because you seem to have a rather positive energy about you while complaining about the things that are going on.
But, this comes up with women all the time. If they're strong, if women CEOs go through this, women in the business place, if they're strong and they're in any way aggressive, they're bitches. Whereas men who are strong and aggressive are powerful and go-getters and ambitious. Women deal with this all the time. It's another thing that's infuriating.
Right. Well, that was why I brought it up, because I'm concerned about how you, because you have to be, I would think, you have to market yourself in a certain way to bring in an audience to fill a theater.
You know, so much of comedy is about intent. So if I'm talking about whatever, is my intent to be offensive, or is it just what I'm talking about? I mean, I think that people know that my intent is not negative.
Right.
You know, I'm not a particularly angry person. I play one on TV, but I'm not a particularly angry person. I'm more conciliatory than angry. And, it's like you get more with sugar than vinegar.
Right. And then there's the adage.
Or raw honey at this point. I don't need sugar anymore.
Male or female, people will say that comedy often comes from the anger.
Well, it does. It comes from rage in many ways. But we all have rage. Anybody who doesn't have rage is not existing. I mean, who doesn't have rage in them? I think comedians might have a little bit more rage because I was thinking about this about Robin Williams. I think that comedians see a little bit more than other people, and then we kind of process it and shoot it back to people, which is why they laugh at recognition and say, "Oh, I never thought of that, but now that you're saying that." And somebody like Robin, he's been on my mind a lot lately. I think his brain worked a little bit differently neurologically than even comedian brain that I have, and my colleagues have. His was even a little bit more twisted that maybe caused him to have such despair.
And it's despair that we saw and obviously helped him in his career and in his comedy. But we didn't realize at what cost it was.
No, at the same time, in the midst of the despair was a tremendously joyous person who brought incredible joy to people's mm-hmm. lives. So it's there's a conundrum. I've been struggling with it because there's something that's not fitting for me, having known him, and it's been eating away at me.
And then, because the last time we talked was also
right after Joan died.
When Joan died. So, and it's we hit with, you know, just within a couple weeks of each other.
Yeah. But Joan's death was a completely different. I mean, Joan was not somebody who would ever have killed herself.
No.
And she, in retrospect, even though she died too young, it was not the worst way to go. You know, she had performed the night mm-hmm. before. She went into a coma. She never knew what hit her. She right. never experienced
well,
decline.
She said she never mm-hmm. wanted it to be boring. She wanted it to be
exciting.
And it was.
And she always said she wanted to die on stage.
Yeah.
Which she kind of did. You know, she had performed the night before. And although I miss her and I wish she was around for another 10, 15 years, it's kind of like a fantasy. Like, well, if I have to go that way, it's not the worst thing that happened.
I want to talk about the 80 years of Choice Celebration. So what is the situation? Can people still come, or is it sold out, or how's that work?
There are definitely still tickets available. If people are interested in coming, you can visit our Facebook page.
Okay.
There's a Eventbrite click through, and you can just buy your ticket online, or you can call our offices.
But they better do it quick, Shelley.
Do it quick. Because
there's not that many left.
Yeah, no. It is. Yeah, there's very few seats left, but right now we can try to still squeeze people in.
And where's it being held?
It's being held at 60 State Street.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Very nice. And it's this Thursday night, and as far as 80 years of Choice Celebration, this is for 80 years of Planned Parenthood or 80 years of Upper Hudson?
Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
80 years. Yeah.
And Planned Parenthood's older than that.
Planned Parenthood will be celebrating. Planned Parenthood National will be celebrating its 100th anniversary in a year or two. Yeah,
that's
and
fantastic.
And I'm not doing stand up. I'm giving an acceptance speech.
Right.
Okay. So, but you.
It'll be funny.
It'll be funny.
I have little doubt in that.
It'll be moments of seriousness, also.
Yeah. And there's also going to be delicious food. A lot of local restaurants have donated food, so there'll be a delicious food tasting and a beautiful bar set up by Taste, so lovely cocktails. It's going to be
Taste, which is gluten-free.
There you go.
Yeah.
So
are you no gluten for you?
Oh, but 20 years.
No gluten,
really?
No sugar?
Well,
no wonder you're angry.
I steal sugar sometimes, but no, I can't eat the gluten. I'm celiac. I can't eat gluten.
Oh.
Yeah.
But a model of health.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
We'll see how it ends up, sure.
I drink, though. I do drink.
Okay. Phew.
I don't understand the not drinking. I mean, I understand if you have a problem and you can't drink. But in daily life, to not drink, I how do you get through the day, let alone the night?
We have it all, plan it all around
exactly.
The studio at any given time. Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood will present comedian Susie Essman with their inaugural Giraffe Award on Thursday night. You can find out more by going to their Facebook page. It's Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. Susie Essman and Shelley Hegan, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Have
thank
a blast
you,
on Thursday.
Thank
it's a
you.
Delight to have you both here. Thank you.
Thanks.
Coming up next, we will hear NPR News, and then we will go after the news to Garrison Keillor, and then we will continue the roundtable. You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.